started with this.
Thank you, sir. So tonight, for the pre-council, we're here to talk about the Wilkes and 6th Street Stormwater Project, which has been around for quite some time. It's actually probably one of the first projects I ever worked on here at the city. We had a street project going over on 6th Street. And staff came to me, Mr. Wellman did, and said, we need to do this stormwater box. Well, we didn't have enough money to do the stormwater box. So here we are 17 years later talking about the stormwater box. So it was put in FY20 for design and 2021 for construction. So that's why we're here today to talk about it. So Aaron or Dave, y'all want to start?
And can I ask why we need to talk about it?
Because it's going to fall in if we don't.
Well, no, I can see why we need to fix it. But why aren't we just fixing it? Why is it...
Well, there's three alignments that we need to discuss. I want you to have a good background on why we're doing it and what we're doing. So
okay.
it involves probably eminent domain, three houses. So it's better to do it in a work session before we have a public hearing on it, so we kind of have a basis for why we're doing what we're doing.
Okay, thanks.
There's options, and we wanted to present the options and then get some direction.
I'm Aaron Keyes, the Engineering and Operations Manager for the Sewer and Stormwater Utilities. I'd like to introduce Tom Wellman. He's Engineering Specialist for the Stormwater Utility, and Corey Thompson. She's the Engineering Supervisor. They're here to help me answer questions. And you're right, typically we don't need direction on most stormwater projects, but this one has a lot of moving parts, and so that's why we wanted to kind of give, I want to give you some background on what we're looking at for design, so you can kind of help us figure out what direction we need to go with this. Because every engineering project evaluates risk versus cost, and again, some solutions are a little more obvious than others. So I'm here to, we'll summarize, here's the agenda. Okay, we'll summarize our stormwater priorities, talk a little bit about design considerations, and then get specifically into this Hickman and 6th stormwater project, and also what some of the next steps could be for this area. So our current stormwater priorities are street flooding and failing infrastructure, because the consequence of failure for street flooding and failing infrastructure has the likelihood of impacting a lot more people. That's why we've been prioritizing those projects. Structure flooding is still a significant factor, but typically that only impacts maybe one or two property owners. And just so we all have the same definition of what structure flooding is, we talk about where it's water running over land into somebody's door, into their basement window well, or into their crawl space access. So we typically don't consider water seeping through cracks or sewer backups as stormwater structure flooding. Those are related problems, but we're just talking about the water that's flowing overland and getting into the structure. We can't really fix or eliminate most structure flooding. We can reduce the occurrence of it. We can manage the stormwater to minimize the damage. I did have a couple projects I was going to give as examples, but in the interest of time, I'll just scroll through those and get to Hickman 6th. So this is an interior photo of the roof of the existing storm box on Hickman. You can see that the concrete has spalled off and exposed the reinforcing steel that's actively rusting. And this box could last 3 days, 3 years, 30 years. We don't know that, but we do know it's compromised. So when we look at stormwater design, when there's a new residential stormwater subdivision, greenfield development, we attempt to manage the stormwater. We can't control stormwater. We can only manage it as best as possible. So for new development, the more frequent storms, the 10-year events, we handle with our pipes and our inlets and our boxes. The less frequent storms or the larger events, we just attempt to manage the amount of water in a way that minimizes risk. So one of the ways that we minimize risk for new developments is areas that are in the FEMA floodplain, including the FEMA Zone X shaded areas. the city requires them to build 2 feet above that floodplain elevation. In a retrofit situation that we're talking about today, we upgrade the infrastructure as best we can. A lot of times there's other utilities, there's structures in the way, and we can't always get it to the design standard or above the design standard that we'd like to. But our priority is to try to reduce risk as much as possible. But there will always be a storm greater than what we can manage with our design. So again, we're not able to eliminate flooding, only reduce the frequency and severity of its impact to structures. So when we look at the Hickman 6th and 7th watershed area, it's approximately 125 acres, and that's the yellow boundary in this diagram. It includes residential, part of Hickman High School, part of Columbia College, some industrial and commercial areas. It's pretty well all developed. Currently, any site that's more than an acre that gets redeveloped does incorporate some detention and water quality best management practices. Both Hickman and Columbia College have incorporated some of those in some of their recent redevelopments. Cullimore Cottages is another example of redevelopment that's incorporated some stormwater improvements. The water quality improvements are really only effective for those storms that are less than an inch of rainfall. They don't have a big impact on the very large flooding events. So when we're talking about stormwater, we got to talk about the whole range of events, the small events up to the very large events. So the small events, that's where your rain gardens and bioretentions are effective. The large events, those are the events we try to convey and minimize risk. So we move on to, again, this is the yellow boundary is the watershed, and the hatched area is the FEMA Zone X shaded floodplain. So this is where the water in this watershed has always gone to. It's the natural flow path. It's an upper part of the Flat Branch watershed. The areas identified in the floodplain have the potential to flood. The structures that were built there were built prior to FEMA existing, and probably most of them aren't above or even 2 feet above the floodplain elevation. You can see this includes almost the entire block between 6th and 7th and Wilkes and Hickman. A longtime local engineer who's now retired grew up in Columbia. He lived on 7th Street, and he's told a number of us a story about how you would open the front door. With a big rain, you'd open the front door and the back door and let the water flow right through. So flooding is not a new problem in this neighborhood. And if you live in a floodplain, one wonders, should you expect to deal with some amount of flooding? And then what is reasonable? And that's part of the question we're asking today.
Ask a question, and that question is this shaded area, of course, which is the floodplain, is that a pooled area, or does this have a flow from the north to the south, or is that what?
Yeah, so water comes in from the yellow areas and basically congregates in that hatched area and then flows down towards Flat Branch. So during a very major event, it looks like a creek or a river that's running through there. Got a picture a little bit. So a quick summary of projects that have been completed just in this floodplain area over probably the last 20 to 30 years. Both 6th and 7th streets were improved, curbs, gutters, sidewalks, some storm drainage. And as John mentioned, we identified the condition of the box there at Hickman in 2003. That was a CDBG project, so it didn't have funds to do the amount of stormwater work that needed to be done, and neither did the stormwater utility. Other projects completed in this area, the sewer utilities done significant I&I work on the public sewer system. And there were also two phases of an Alton Avenue storm drainage project that were completed in this area. So current and future projects, currently, if you've been over there, you can see we've got a very big pile of dirt at Jeff Middle School where we're doing the 5th to Wilkes relief sewer. And today we're discussing the Hickman and 6th stormwater project. We also have some other projects proposed for the area. Some include neighborhood improvement type projects, like in the backyards between 6th and 7th, there's an abandoned box that we'd like to address. And there's another improvement we'd like to I'll discuss at the end that's there at Hickman and 5th.
The green is the sewer?
The green is the sewer. We haven't finalized an alignment, but it's a proposed alignment at this point. So the timeline, we did identify the project in 2003, but we identified it in the stormwater ballot because there was that period of time we didn't fund any stormwater capital projects. So 2015 allowed us to start funding stormwater projects again. We had an interested parties meeting in January. We've met individually with a number of the property owners out here. We also had a Zoom meeting last week with a number of the neighbors or members of the neighborhood association. We'd like to have a public hearing this fall, but depending on what's decided, that may get pushed to 2021. And an estimated cost for this phase of the project is about $1.1 million. I would hope we could spend less than that, but I also want to be conservative. So this is the project. The blue area is where the failed storm box is that I showed the picture of earlier. The dashed lines are the location of the existing box. And you can see that existing box makes two sharp turns. So if you think about when you're driving and you have to make a turn to the right or to the left, you have to slow down. It's the same idea with the water. You're going to have to, it has to slow down to make that turn. So the sharper the turn, the more the water slows down, and the more the water backs up. So that reduces the capacity of the box. The same is true when you have a very low, flat slope on the box, which is the case for the piece that crosses Hickman Avenue. So our project goal, our first project goal, is to replace the failing box. But when you're looking at just replacing the box, you're wondering, well, can we improve this situation? We know there's flooding out there. So maybe this is an opportunity to improve the hydraulics of the box as well.
Show us where the box is. This is obviously a camera photo. I would assume that you camered the box.
Right, yeah. So it crosses Hickman over here, and then it comes down, and it's pretty much the top of the box is the sidewalk right here. And then it comes into the street, and it works its way up the street, so, and it's along, and it's the top of this, the top of the box is the sidewalk up this part of this side of the street as well.
Where's the failing portion that you have the camera of?
I believe it's this portion right here along Hickman.
Where the sidewalk is in front of the center project?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you planning to replace, I mean, is this, how long is this box? I guess I think of a box as being a couple of feet, but it sounds like this is.
Oh, what's the size of the box?
I mean, is this,
because.
Okay.
It's just shape.
It's just square.
It's a square instead of a.
And then you have a pipe on either end of this?
No,
it's
a box that continues on down. It goes through Douglas Park and down Providence Road and then empties out into Flagler.
Okay, so it's just a square storm pipe.
Storm box, yep, concrete box.
Okay.
This is a stream that basically we buried at some point.
Correct, yes, a stream that we've buried. So our second goal would be to reduce flooding and improve hydraulics of the box. We'd like to improve the overflow if possible, add inlets to the system. So that would mean that some of the more frequent storms that cause flooding now, like what you see in this picture, may not cause this type of flooding. We'd like to incorporate a smoother alignment, both horizontally and vertically, so that the box has greater capacity. So where we can, we'd like to improve the overflow path because, again, that box is not going to carry every storm event. There are going to be storm events it won't manage, so that water has to go overland. And you can see in this photo that 6th Street is completely flooded. So you're looking south towards Jeff Middle School, and it's all water. And because of the restrictions in the box, you can see maybe you can see that water's bubbling out of an inlet on the right side of the photo, right by that utility pole. You can also see that it seems like the water in this photo is headed towards that red fence in the background. That's the overflow path. That's where the water naturally wants to go. So this is that overflow path from 6th to Hickman. And there's the red fence. So in the photo, you can see the stop sign that's up here, and you can see that that sits up higher than this red fence here. So the overflow path typically goes from this structure on the corner to this blue house. That's the direction the water is heading. So for a very big rain event, that's where the water wants to go. So if you think about that path, and there's a lot of things in the way of that path, obstructing that path. There's a house, there's a fence, there's a tree, there's another house, and then there's another house behind it that you can't quite see. So many structures in this neighborhood have probably had flooded crawl spaces or basements over the years. And again, that's water going in the windows or access points. For individual owners or residents that live in a house that floods, it can be costly and stressful. We've talked to many of these owners over the years. They have ongoing maintenance costs to clean up after each flooding event. They want to protect themselves, but sometimes they don't have the means to do so. And they also worry about being able to resell their property. So every time it rains very heavily, they do worry. So I just ask that those individual concerns be part of this conversation. And the only way that we can truly protect a property from flooding is by removing it. But I know that affordable housing is also a consideration, and that's one of the reasons we're bringing this to you. The stormwater utility can't afford to remove all the houses in this neighborhood, obviously, and we wouldn't even want to consider that. So we must consider how frequent a risk is acceptable for an individual owner to deal with. How often does their house flood? Is it okay and acceptable? So again, we want to replace the failing infrastructure, and we'd like to improve the hydraulics. So we've got three alignments here. They're not ordered in any priority. They're just given numbers for description. So we want to improve hydraulics. You can see that the alignments have removed some of the sharp bends. There's still some bends in them, but they're not quite as sharp. And the slope on these would be improved. Two of the alignments go through properties that have structures on them, which means the city would need to purchase the property and remove the structure. So we'll look at each of these more in depth. So this is the first alignment. And it would remove the houses at 603 North 6th and 513 Hickman Avenue. You can see it has fewer bends. Removing the houses provides an opportunity to open up the overflow path so water could flow more freely in the large events and reduce the elevation of water around the other remaining structures. There is still a flooding risk for the property at 515 Hickman. The existing box flows around 200 cubic feet per second. For comparison, this box would flow about 270 cubic feet per second, just to give some quantitative measure.
Say that one more time.
The existing would be about 200 cubic feet per second, and this alignment would be about 270 cubic feet per second. So alignment two is probably the straightest alignment. As you can see, you would need to remove the structure at 515 Hickman Avenue. This one would flow about 275 cubic feet per second. So really, this one and the first alignment are pretty close. They're about the same as far as capacity of the box. Removing the structure on this corner would allow for an overflow path to be improved, but there's still a flooding risk for 603 North 6th. And again, this is a floodplain. There's a flooding risk for all the properties that are in this area. Properties at 603 and 515 are more at risk because of their location and the natural overflow path, and the elevation of their first floor is lower than the other homes in the area. So their first floor is lower than even the structure at 513. However, there's a lot of basements and crawl spaces that are still lower than that. But typically, people don't live in the crawl space or the basement in this neighborhood. And this is alignment three. It stays mostly in the right-of-way. No structures would be removed. The hydraulic capacity of this box is approximately 230 cubic feet per second. So the other two alignments have a little more box capacity. And this is all difficult to quantify because of the intensity of the rainfall. We would need to do significant modeling to verify those numbers. But just trying to give a rough quantification of the difference between the alignments.
And that's because there are more angles here. It's not the size of the box.
Correct.
This has to do with the route.
Yeah, it has to do with the route.
What do the property owners of the, you know, when you talk about we need to buy this or that, one of them looks like it's a community center.
Right.
And a couple of the others, I presume, are homes.
You predicted what I was going to say next.
It's the lead in for your next slide.
Yes.
Okay.
So staff has met individually with all three of those property owners. And both 513 and 603, they've done some significant upgrades and remodeling. And at 513, they've done a lot of work to protect their property and their crawl space from flooding. And the first floor of that building is higher, considerably higher than the other two properties, and not as susceptible to flooding the first floor as the other two. Each of the owners is interested in possibly selling to the city, but of course they want to know how much, you know, how much is the city going to pay? And before we got an appraisal, we wanted direction from council to move forward with investigating specific options so that we weren't just going out and getting appraisals that we didn't need. So once you give us some direction here, we would go out and if it was one of the either one, alignment one or two, we would go out and get an appraisal. And that would be the amount that we would first offer the property owner. You know, a lot of times people say that we would undercut or something, but we just go based off appraised value. We have not previously condemned to acquire property for stormwater purposes. And I don't think we're really interested in doing that in this case either. I think we've got some options.
How many more slides do you have?
I'm trying to speed through so we can discuss. So the next thing I wanted to talk about the next steps because that kind of plays into the decision making. Like I said, we've got some other minor projects up in the basin, but the big one I want to talk about is a street improvement at 5th and Hickman. And so that improvement would lower the intersection at Hickman and 5th. And that would benefit a number of property owners. So the big piece is that the blue boundary of this diagram approximates what FEMA refers to as the standard project flood. The gray structures have a first floor that's above the estimated water elevation. So with the current intersection, 7 houses and 3 garages would have water above the first floor during it's a very major event, so very infrequent. Many would have water going into their basements through basement windows and stuff like that. If we were to improve and lower that intersection, there would still be two properties that would flood, and those would be 515 and 603. And again, that would just be the water goes in the first floor of those structures, and then you can see there's a couple garages as well. This work would be approximately $700,000. We don't currently have it programmed into our capital improvement plan. We can push this intersection work up with the storm box work to have it constructed sooner, but we don't currently have it programmed.
That went by me too fast. Could you roll back and tell me about
sure.
the intersection you're discussing?
Okay.
Which intersection would you lower?
This is at 5th. And Hickman. So this is actually Washington up here.
Yes, yes.
And 5th down here in Hickman. So if you look at the photograph, I was trying to speed up. If you look at the photograph, this is standing at the corner of 6th and Hickman looking
yes.
towards 5th. And you could see that there's a little bit of a rise there. So it's a little bit of a hydraulic restriction. And
well,
there's
a rise in the entire street. It sort of has, I'm not going to get my concave and convex words right, but it's a rounded
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that you get
and
water gullies on either side.
This whole intersection kind of mm-hmm. Is a bit of a hydraulic restriction for the very large events. So we focus on the box for the more frequent, smaller events, and then this intersection we would focus on for the very large events to try to reduce impacts to property owners.
So when you focus on that intersection, does that mean that you're going to grade it out and you're going to lower the road, you're going to put in a slope and lower it, and there would be a side elevation of some kind where you're going to have a retaining wall or something?
Right. Along the Jeff Middle School property, there would have to probably be a retaining wall or something. But, yeah, it's a significant, I believe, what was it, 1.5 to 2 feet we were lowering, or more than that? Around there, yeah, that we were lowering. So it's significant grading work that would need to take place in order to change that intersection. So that's pretty much it. We're trying to balance a lot with this project, and I know there's a lot of interests in affordable housing. There's interest in reducing flooding and protecting our ratepayers, and so that's why this particular project we felt needed to come before council to discuss which alignment has the most chance for success moving forward as far as y'all voting for it, so that we can do an improvement for this neighborhood. The ultimate goal is to replace that box and improve storm drainage for the neighborhood. And if we need to move this intersection work up as well, we'd like your input on that.
I want to be respectful of Councilman Fowler. I know this is in the first ward, but it's also in your neighborhood. So
yes, it is.
I want to yield to you if you want to go first and any comments you want to make.
I wonder if I was trying to hold a slide so we could go backwards. So I live across the street from 603 North 6th Street. Let's go back to, let's see, yeah, there's, you can see my house
right
here.
There.
So in the conversations that we've had over the years that I was active in my neighborhood association, and members of the neighborhood association are here, since we talked to you on Monday, we've collectively spent about 5 hours discussing this among ourselves because of our concern about the removal of affordable housing, particularly affordable housing that's been recently renovated. We have an owner-occupied at 603. We have an affordable three-bedroom, two-bath house at 513 for college students at an affordable $400 a month, which is hard to find in Columbia and proximate to the University of Missouri. And then we also have, much to our delight, the Center Project in our neighborhood. So I've spoken to each of the property owners, and they are reluctantly willing to have you do a valuation. It presents challenges to them, including in speaking with a member of the board of the Center Project. They would have trouble finding another place for their organization that would meet their needs if they had to sell the property to the city to be torn down and they had to find another place. Now, everyone will always figure out how to live their lives afterwards, but it would have a significant disruption on that part of North 6th Street. It does not, and I would ask Mr. McManus if he needs to chime in on this, it doesn't improve or decrease the value of my house. I am just a caring observer across the street because I enjoy living in a neighborhood with neighbors. I also have some strong opinions about houses that get torn down when we have 14,000 households that are burdened by the cost of their housing in Columbia. And then, and this is one of those instances where we're looking at taking out two of them after you also took out three of them over on Agin Street and West Worley. So the neighborhood had some questions for you and Mr. Sorrell on Monday, and they asked for some numbers and modeling. Gratefully, one of our neighbors is an engineer, and he asked some very specific questions about flow that he would like to have that information, and he would like to review some modeling as to how the water would flow in any one of those three configurations. We also have, and I wrote the question down so I was sure to ask it properly, what's the most effective solution from an engineering point of view that does not involve the removal of the houses? And the neighbors would like to have some, not only an answer to that, but some data that goes along with that. And then what's the most effective solution from an engineering point of view that could maximize upstream space? Because when you could maybe go back a couple of slides to where you can see the space between the 6th and 7th Street. I think you have a diagram. Let's go, yes, let's go here. Between 6th and 7th Street, we have a lot of deep yards. And I also spent some time early this morning reading the stormwater proposal for the Business Loop CID, which is just to the north of us. And they have some considerations that they would like to make. And so one of the things the neighborhood would like to have considered in this process is whether, in collaboration with the Business Loop CID and with the property owners, oops, don't scroll away just yet.
I just wanted to show you that where the watershed boundary was.
I understand. Okay. I understand. But there's some action going on to the north of us, and they have some troubles there. There's some action going on the property that is destined to be the Cullimore Cottages, and there's been some remediation and engineering work done because of that. But given that they have this keen interest in starting a program of providing a district-wide solution, I think they have another name for it, but where the stormwater impacts are shared or the remediation is shared, the neighborhood, in the North Central neighborhood, would also like to ask about some shared remediation, particularly in all that green space that runs between 6th and 7th Street. So while we understand flooding, I certainly understand it because I live on that street and my neighbors do, we feel like this is the damage that it would do to the neighborhood would be substantial. And so we're looking for the least damaging alternative to the city's coming in and putting in a fix. You think you'd be able to provide that information to the neighbors and the neighborhood? I'm speaking in part on their behalf because I have a platform to talk about this tonight.
Sure, and that's why I tried to bring back some specific numbers about box capacity and the differences between the alignments. Obviously, that alignment that goes through the right-of-way, that would not impact any structures, but the amount of flow it can convey is also quite a bit less, and so you would still see flooding on the street a little more frequently than you would with the other two options. And so that's what we're trying to decide, is what risk are we willing to accept? You know, they give names to these different events. I think it's hard to quantify what that looks like, but so the alignment three, it would definitely carry what's called the 10-year event. It could probably carry a little more than the 10-year event. It would not carry the 25-year event, whereas the other two alignments would carry the 25-year event. So that's the quantification that we're looking for. But until we do some specific modeling, I couldn't tell you exactly what storm. And, you know, I'm not sure any of us would know the difference when water's a foot and a half high or if it's close to 2 feet. I mean, you just know it's a lot of water.
No, so. I understand. And I've been there during heavy rains when the water comes out. So, but could we do some modeling that included that street alignment with taking into account some bioswales and or rain gardens and or remediation to the north of us and see what that would look like in combination and do some modeling? That's what the neighborhood's asking for.
Right. And rain gardens and bioretention basins, again, those are very specific to water quality type improvements. So for your events that are about an inch or less, that's where those have an impact. But for your very large events where we're talking 7-8 inches of rainfall, those aren't going to have a very big benefit. There's still going to be a lot of water. So really, a detention structure, a large detention structure is going to have a benefit for the larger storms. So, yes, the bioretention in rain gardens does have a benefit for the smaller events that happen every year. It would definitely do that. And that's one of, I kind of sped through it for time's sake, but that's one of the things we would consider when we do the 5th to Wilkes relief sewer, is in those backyard areas, maybe incorporating some sort of water quality or bioretention in that area where that abandoned box is located.
So the abandoned box that runs between 6th and 7th Street, that has to do with the sewer, not with the stormwater.
No, I think that was an abandoned storm box.
I think it is an abandoned storm box.
Right.
Because the way that takes a turn.
And there's a lot of yard ponding that occurs back in those in a lot of those properties. And so that's something, if our sewer alignment goes up that direction, that's something we could consider also incorporating some stormwater best management practices. And that'll you'll see a difference in the smaller storms.
Understood. That. But I think the neighborhood would like to have that conversation because decimating that corner, even though I understand it's a noble purpose, has an impact on the neighborhood. And, you know, we are we're not the oldest neighborhood in Columbia, but we're one of the older neighborhoods in Columbia. But then we also have a problem across the street that we need the city's protection, and that is that the Columbia Public Schools, and it is larger than an acre across the street, and they've replatted it, so it's larger than an acre. It always has been. They want to put a gymnasium up there on top of landfill. And we know every time they do something, the consequences come out in a certain radius of that. And so they've got approximately 20 feet of landfill, I understand, because I was asking the guy who was trenching for the sewer that's going on right now. We've got all kinds of exciting construction equipment up there now. How far down they'd have to go before they hit solid ground, because that's where you start with the footings for this gymnasium that they have in their bond. I don't know if the bond passed or not, but they've been talking about doing that. And so then we get into another place of peril with we have to rely on the school district to do what they say they're going to do. And that really puts us, I'm looking at Mr. City Manager, this really puts us at a disadvantage because we don't have the ability to counter what the school district says they're doing, and that we do need the protection of the city, the neighborhood needs the protection of the city for each and every step of that process. And I say that with some experience, given that they did not follow and employ best management practices with their last construction project in our neighborhood.
They didn't meet the ordinance? Is that what you're saying?
They put in impervious pavement and then maintained it so badly that they have diminished its capacity. And then they pretend that they didn't treat it so badly. And I have photographs, which Mr. Wellman has looked at on prior occasions. I mean, they'll be out there power washing and degrading the surface. Every time all of that chat comes off the surface and pools at the bottom, right where the cars drive out, I go out and take another photograph. And you can imagine how many photographs I have about the fact that they don't treat that properly. And that was supposed to have all kinds of remediation benefits to the neighborhood when they put that surface in. So we have some issues with whether or not we can count on them to follow the plans that they file with the city.
Okay.
I'm Mayor.
Of course. I have an inquiry first. Would you, I'm not sure where it is, but maybe roll up to, I'm sorry, go the other way. Ms. Keyes, thank you. One more. One that shows all three of those. Right there for a minute. And scroll up just a little bit. Okay. So to the southwest part of the diagram that's labeled existing reinforced concrete?
Yes.
Is it too late as a alignment number four to your aforementioned comments that you want to remove some of those dog legs and smooth out that line to go from that to back up another 100 feet or whatever it is and add a new box from that first dog leg?
From down here?
Correct. And align with alignment three. Wouldn't that smooth out everything without removing any properties?
Looks good.
Go ahead.
It certainly would. The only question then is how much it costs.
And well, wouldn't it cost a lot less than removing two structures?
Possibly not.
Could we ask?
Sure. Absolutely.
I mean, that seems to achieve some of the hydraulic issues you've expressed. I just don't know where Columbia Public Schools is in construction, but it seems like now would be the time to do that.
Right, and that would be the other concern, where the gymnasium, you know, where the footprint of that is in relation to, you know, smoothing out that alignment.
Better to do it now. It looks like we already have an easement there for some of that. and that removes some of the
bend,
the angles.
Yep.
And runs that down in the middle of the street, and
yep.
And then you can address some of the other.
It looks good. It certainly looks like a good idea. If you know, I don't know what's above that or how much it would cost.
Like I said, I don't recall where the alignment of the new gym is in relation to that.
So it's
that,
closer that to be. Their building. They're not. It's they intend to have it, I think, attached to the other structures they've already built up there on the berm.
Right.
So maybe that would be, you know, as we consider alternatives, that might be one. Even if it costs a little bit more, it eliminates some of the heartache. Councilman Fowler, and even Director Keyes, are the property owners of 513 and 515 and 603 also the tenants?
No. So 515 is owned by a home builder and investor, and there are three college students that live there, delightful young people. 603 is owner-occupied.
Okay.
And 515 is the center project, community organization that we value in our neighborhood.
Okay, got it. Like and they own that building.
They own that building, okay. Yes, they do.
Got it.
Thank you.
Mr. Scala.
Yeah, just a couple of observations. I mean, I think that's a good idea. You want to get rid of these dog legs wherever you can, and maybe backing up might eliminate that. It seems to me like, and there's going to be a lot of discussion here in the neighborhood and so on, continuing discussion about this. Seems to me like what you presented suggests that alignment 2 is probably has the most beneficial capacity data with it, because it's the least, it has the least dog legs. It has the downside of getting rid of one dwelling unit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And alignment 3 is kind of or alignment 1 is probably totally unnecessary because it gets rid of almost three issues.
Two, yes,
or two. Yeah. And it creates some more dog legs. There are some dog legs on the existing alignment as well. I guess my question is, so it sounds like what you're suggesting, if we're just totally talking about capacity and not the rest of it, and kind of minimizing the amount of affordable housing, if you will, to get rid of affordable housing, alignment 2 might be a candidate. However, I guess the question I have is that how is the street improvement going to affect these alignments in terms of making a decision based upon the best alignment capacity? Obviously, that intersection improvement is also going to have an effect. I mean, these alignments really have to do with normal storms, right? And then there is some additional consideration for large storms and large capacity storms.
Right.
So,
sorry.
No, that's all right. I'm just curious as to how that thinking affects the alignment issue in terms of fixing that intersection as well.
Right, and that's, like I said, there's kind of a lot of moving parts. So we focused on improving the box because we felt like that improved the situation for the most frequent events. By improving the overflow in this area, which would include removing a structure, that would improve the situation for some of the infrequent events. The intersection improvement down at 5th and Wilson, that'll improve for infrequent events for more
large,
for more of the structures. So it won't, you know, you won't see a lot of difference for the frequent events, you know, for your 5, 10, 15, 25, you know, those type of events, but you'll see it for the larger storm events.
But in terms of strictly engineering, a straight through, I mean, that's the best, that's the most capacity, and that's the best result.
Yeah.
Right? But you have to consider these structures as well, obviously.
Right. Yep. So that's, you know, those are the different pieces that we're considering is, you know, how we can best improve capacity of, you know, where the water's flowing. We've got the underground capacity with the box, but then the above ground capacity, you know, with just overland flow. Definitely a lot of considerations.
Is there a number you're trying to get to on that capacity that flow? I mean,
well, our design standard for residential neighborhoods is 10 years for like collectors and things like that. It goes up to 25 years. In this situation where there's a lot of people that that do have flooding issues, it would be nice to carry the 25-year event in the box itself and then manage as much of the overflow as we can, you know, the neighborhoods. But the 100-year, managing the 100-year without anybody flooding, well, that's not possible unless you remove the structures, for sure, and fill in some basements and things like that. But, you know, again, trying to minimize risk as much as possible for as many people as possible, that would be the ideal. But then there's sometimes something in between, because there's also a cost to that.
I prompted another question that I had. That is, I mean, you mentioned trying to accommodate as much as possible with the flow with the boxes, but I take it that there's a limit to increasing the size of the boxes because you're already restricted in what the rest of the boxes can carry.
Correct. The downstream capacity would restrict.
So you can only make it as large as what the downstream capacity is if it were a straight flow through.
Correct. And that's where the modeling comes in. If we were to model this, it may not pass the 25-year event because of other downstream constraints. But if we were just to look at this little piece of the box and do a quick calculation, it could handle a 25-year event.
So I appreciate all the time that you've spent on this and all the time you've spent with us as a neighborhood and the property owners individually. I wonder if we could have some modeling around what we just discussed as option four, along with some upstream remediation, and see where we get on numbers there. And I think that would be a conversation the neighborhood would like to have.
And I'd like to see an alignment four to see what that would look like.
Well, I hear an alignment three and four is probably what we should come back with. And then the next question would be the intersection at Fifth and Hickman. Is that something that we should move forward with more quickly, or schedule that in relation to some, you know, we've got a lot of projects, so.
You think it'll help? Seems like you're going to have that street closed and maybe time to do it anywhere from that intersection all the way down.
Well, maybe that's what most of the council wants. I'm not convinced that alignment three is the best. It could be. It's part of the conversation. I mean, the idea of a straight through as much as possible to accommodate the rest of the neighbors in that community might make some sense as well. But that depends on, I mean, it's a very parochial thing. It's a very local thing.
Right.
And I would defer to the first ward councilwoman. But I think we want to maximize as much as possible and save as much as possible at the same time. That's the trade-off, and that's part of this discussion.
Anything else? Of course, thank you.
Thank you very much.
What's your time frame for coming back or doing some more due diligence?
With alignment four, that'll take us some time. So I'll say we're shooting more toward next spring now, because that'll take us a little time to look into that and do some modeling, you know.
Great. Okay. Any further discussion while we're in work session? Shall we take a 5-minute break and come back at 6:59?